ounce, but you drink out.
This is horrible. We have the heat on, but we have the heat set on. Guess what temperature?
54.
No, we have it a little bit higher. We have it on 66.
I can't say nothing. I've been keeping our heat on 67. So, proud of me?
I'm proud of you.
I have it set on walk-in cooler, not morgue.
I was fine in our bedroom, and then I came through the kitchen to come in here, and I guess the floor difference, I was just like, oh, my feet. So I had to go put on socks.
The bag you just showed me, your feet. I'm surprised you're that flexible to do that.
I've been working out, okay?
Doing what? Running that mouth?
Oh, you know. When I was on vacation, I worked out, and then I went on vacation, and I gained everything that I lost.
So let me guess, you ate at Paula Deen's?
No, we didn't. Let me tell you, because I ain't even told you about this vacation. So we went on vacation, and, I mean, granted, we basically, like, Tennessee's our second home. We didn't do anything we normally do. Like, we didn't go to Paula Deen's like we normally do. We didn't go to the local goat like we wanted to do. We ended up basically eating at any place that we would eat at home. Like,
Taco Bell.
No. We ate at Cracker Barrel, which that was the whole ordeal in itself. I gotta tell you about that. And then we ate at Texas Roadhouse, and I think we were so starving by the time we went to Texas Roadhouse that, like, everything was just like, oh, so good.
So let me tell you, how about we really never go to Texas Roadhouse here, even though we get two? If we want to go to Texas Roadhouse, we always go to the mountains to either Gatlinburg or Pigeon Forge. I'm no joke. Like, every single time we go, we're just like, want to go to the mountains? So we literally go to the mountains just to eat Texas Roadhouse, and then we, like, go around the shops, and then we're like, all right, time to go home.
That's kind of like what we did, but, so we just basically eat at all the places that we could have ate here. But anyways, at Cracker Barrel, so we get there, and there's legit, this is, like, the one that's at the beginning of the strip in Pigeon Ford, like, right there on the left. So we pull up, there's nobody. Nobody there. So we're like, okay, sweet. The only place in town that's not popping. All right. We get in.
They're closed.
No, they're not closed. We get in. Anthony goes, puts in the name. I'm like looking around at stuff. And he comes to me. He's like, they said it's an hour to an hour and 15 minute wait. And I look around and there's like, nobody, like, cause you could see the tables, you know, outside.
Why was it so long?
Because they were legit social distancing, like, legit.
And I thought Tennessee was you didn't have to wear a mask anymore.
They were the only ones that were social distancing. Like, I mean, you know how Cracker Barrel's divided in kind of like sections, you know, depending on the size of the place. This one basically just had, like, four, you know, how they do the walls. So it had, like, four little eating sections. They only had, like, three families in each of the areas.
Man.
It was ridiculously, like, social distancing. You could be two people and you're eating at a table that should fit 10 people. Like, that's how bad their social distancing is.
Or should I say how good their social distance?
Yeah.
So. No, wait. Remember, you know, back in the day when they're like, I wouldn't touch you with a 6-foot pole. Now that's what we're living.
So, for some reason, like, we were really wanting Cracker Barrel, so we're like, whatever, we want it, we'll stay. Nah, that should have been a sign, leave.
Well, wherever you went, you probably would have waited that long, if not longer, but how your story's going, I'm pretty sure you hated it.
Let me tell you. So we get there, we finally get a table, but the point to even getting to the table, the host, it was two guys that was the hostess. That's just where they messed up in the beginning. Two guys hostess, because people would walk up, they would say, oh, it's an hour and a half to hour and 40 minute way. People's like, why? They're like, I kid you not. The hostess said if you don't want to wait, fast food is just down the street. I was like, is that?
That's what you would say. That's what you would say, for real. Like, if you were a hostess, you'd be like, go somewhere else.
Like, oh,
that's so what I gotta do.
And so, you know, we were just, like, standing close by, and, like, their comments was, I mean, they were referring people to other places. I mean, just, like, everything. It was hilarious. So we finally get our table, legit, like, an hour and 20 minutes after we've been there. We sit down. Our waitress, she was good. We ordered the food. A table that was, like, off in the corner from us, who sat down a little bit after us, I mean, like, 5 minutes after us, got their food. I don't think nothing of it, because, you know, depending on what you order, sometimes it comes up before, you know?
Yeah.
Our waitress comes up to us and was like, I can show you the ticket, but your ticket to the cooks was lost.
It happens.
So we're like, okay, that's cool, you know, like, whatever. Just brush it off. Don't think nothing of it. A little bit later, about 20 minutes later, they bring us the food. Our food is cold. Cold! And then the manager is the one that brings it. And then he's like, oh no, I see. Let me give you some extra biscuits. These biscuits were burnt. So I'm just like sitting there like, thank you for these burnt biscuits. Okay.
And your biscuits.
I mean, like, some things I couldn't even put in my mouth to eat because it was just, like, muh, uh. And so we were just kind of like, this is so great. And just kind of, like, laughing it off. Well,
they had a social distance the food.
Like, it was the most horrible service. Like, there was nobody in there for them to be losing everybody's ticket.
Servers and kitchen people don't go together. Trust me, being a server. I mean, I'm not a server now, but, you know, back in the day.
But, I mean, like, I didn't have an issue with them losing the ticket, because I know stuff happens. I know it does. But when you only have 10 tables at most at this restaurant, and we know in this little bitty corner of three people, you lost two? It's not really good. That was one of our little experiences during our trip. It was hilarious.
Man, that's crazy.
Today's podcast is presented to you by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space, so you always know how much you're going to get when you include an ad from Podgo. Apply today and become a member and immediately be contacted with advertisers to fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And make sure you add our podcast in the How Did You Hear About Podgo section of the application.
So, Tamara, let me tell you about this horrible missing person case that ends up with a somewhat happy ending. Okay?
Okay. Let me pause you right there. This dum-dum is driving by Crackle Barrel.
Is it the one in Tennessee?
No.
Did he do bad things to the Tennessee Cracker Barrel?
I'm not saying it.
Back of the Cracker Barrel. I told Anthony, I'm like, there are three other Cracker Barrels on the same street. And I'm like, they need to get their stuff together before they're shut down Cracker Barrel.
I didn't realize there were so many, like, back to back.
But anyways, back to our story that we really haven't even started. So,
let's just start the story, because what have we started?
Just telling you that this is a horrible case that has a happy, somewhat happy ending. Yep, that's how much we got. Just one sentence in.
And then there goes our rambling.
Anyways, Jamie Lynn Kloss was born on July 13th, 2005. She was the only child to James and Denise Kloss. The three lived in Wisconsin. And this 21-year-old dude named Jake Patterson drove by Jamie's home one day on his way to work and decided, yep, I'm going to kidnap her. And he basically, all he did was see her getting, it was either on or off the school bus. And I can't remember which one the article actually said, because I think I wrote down one, but maybe it was the other opposite way. But anyway, she was either getting on or off the school bus, and he seen her. I was just like, yeah, I want to kidnap her. And he said to the police later on, if it wasn't her, it would have been somebody else.
Like that?
Yeah, like, just a weird
man. He's only 21.
Yep. So, on October 15th, he made his third visit to this house. But this time, I think he was just kind of, like, getting up the nerve, maybe, like, kind of scoping it out. So, on the third time when he went to the house, he came with a shotgun. Shortly before 12:53 a.m., Jake parked his car at the end of the driveway. He wore a black coat and a ski mask. So once Jake, you know, reached the door, the family dog went insane. And
so he didn't know there was a dog.
I guess not. And the dad, you know, like, woke up trying to figure out what the heck was going on. Why is the dog barking? So he goes down, and basically, it's 1 a.m. Your dog's freaking out. Somebody's banging on your front door. I'm hiding under my bed calling 911. That's just what I'm going to be doing. Just saying. But James goes to the front door, shines a flashlight through the window portion of the front door. I guess kind of like the little bitty half moon type thing.
What, like acting like the cop, like shining his flashlight, beating
up? No, the dad shined the light, kind of like to see who was out there. So he shines a light through that, and for some reason, he thinks Jake, the guy that's about to, you know, kidnap Jamie, is a cop.
That's what I'm saying. I figured with him beating up that late, he would think it was a cop.
Oh, okay. I thought you was saying that. I thought you was, like, mixing the people.
Well, okay. Yes, I figured that they would think that was a cop, but I thought Jake had the light shining and in like a cop, so kind of both.
Yeah. Okay. So Jake started yelling, open the door, and to get on the ground. And then he fires a shot once, killing James instantly.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How's that a happy ending?
I said it's a somewhat happy ending.
Well, it's not a happy beginning.
No, it's not. Hence the horrible kidnapping. So then he shoots the doorknob to make his way into this house. Jake checks every room because he wants no witnesses left behind. He has no clue, like, who's all in this house, how many people's in this house. I mean, there could be like 1,002 people in this house. He has no clue. He knows he's in a mission to get this one individual, and he's taking out anybody who stands in his way.
So, he just don't care, does he?
No, he don't. So around 12:53 a.m., a call was made to 911, but nobody spoke, nobody said nothing. And before, like, the call ended, the operator heard yelling.
So who called?
They assume it was Denise, but they don't know for sure. They just know it came from her phone.
But it probably was her if the knocking happened at that time.
Yeah. Don't think. I want to call him Jake from State Farm. So if I say that, don't be offended. But when I hear Jake, I think State Farm. I know it wasn't him calling 911.
Well, at this point, I don't think he really cares.
So he finds that the bathroom door is locked. So he begins to ram it. And finally, he breaks the door in half, and he sees Denise and Jamie in the bathtub, basically, and she's, like, just bear hugging her daughter, like, trying to protect her. And somehow or another, I don't know exactly how they did it to, like, barricade the bathroom, but they, like, pulled out a drawer to, like, block it, so he had issues trying to get in. That's why he had to legit ram the door and break it in half. But anyways, before he, like, got in, he was yelling at Denise, and he was like, I want you to tie her up, like, duct tape her mouth shut. And Denise was just, like, too distraught. Like, she heard her husband get shot. She knows her husband is probably dead, if not, like, knocking on death's door. And she has no clue what's going on. So she's like, she couldn't do it. So he gets frustrated.
Oh, my God, anyways.
Yeah, I don't think I could tape my child's mouth shut and tie him up.
No, absolutely not.
So Jake did it himself, and as he was walking out of the bathroom, he turns his head away from Denise and shoots her in the head. Just kind of like he's walking out, he goes to shoot her, turns his head up, like cannot even look at her.
Sicko.
So he drags Jamie outside, places her in the trunk of his car. Let me tell you what the weirdo did to his car. You know, the emergency tap in your trunk. He cut it out so she couldn't pull it and escape.
Well, he thought that one through.
The license plates on his cars, or his car, I don't know if he has cars, but he switched them out. And then, for some reason, I would have not even thought of this, but the dome light in his car, he disabled it. So when cars were passing, they wouldn't be able to see him. Like, they couldn't get, like, a little glimpse of what he looked like.
So he'd been planning this out for a while.
Yeah. Oh, he was. I don't have it in my notes, so I'm going to go ahead and tell you. Like, he was so prepared. He shaved his head and his beard so he would have no hair DNA that could have came out and left at the house.
Wow.
He was prepared. He watched all his CSIs. He was on a mission.
So be aware of bald, cleanly shaved guys. I said, so be aware of bald, cleanly shaved guys.
Take notes of your weirdos. So cops arrive at the house 4 minutes after the 911 call. 4 freaking minutes.
That don't happen often.
I don't know.
Wisconsin must not have nothing going on.
They must have been, like, super close by. So, anyways, Jake pulls over down the road from the house when the cops are, like, speeding by him with their sirens on. So, you know, Jamie's in the trunk and hear all this. And it's just kind of like, oh. Because it's like you hear him getting closer, then it's, like, off at a distance.
Yeah.
So, cops walk through the family's home. They see James dead in the living room. They see Denise dead in the bathroom, but no sight of Jamie anywhere. Jake took her to his cabin that was 2 hours away. And this cabin was like his dad's cabin, but Jake lived there. So, it was like this small little, I guess you would say kind of like a hunting cabin. It had like a kitchen and a bedroom. In a bathroom, and that was about it. Like, just itty bitty cabin. So, all that was in his room was a twin size bed. Jake made Jamie change into different pajamas and then force her under the mattress and then sealed off all the exits before going to sleep. This is where she stayed.
Under the mattress?
Under, like, yeah, like, he, his bed. His mattress and, like, the springs under the bed.
So, you know, not in between the box spring and the mattress?
No, like, under the bed. Like, under.
I mean, that's better than being in between a box spring and a mattress.
I don't know, like, how I envisioned the cops saying it was under his mattress. It was, like, the twin bed was, like, the metal one. The metal box springs already kind of like built into it. You know what I'm talking about? Like, this is what I'm envisioning.
That was like a little top.
Yeah. So
mattress on top.
That's what I envision when they say she was underneath the mattress.
Gotcha.
So 1 week after her disappearance, 2,000 volunteers searched for Jamie. By October 26th, a $50,000 reward was announced for any information leading to her recovery. Investigators received more than 2,000 tips. The police had no suspects during this time that Jamie went missing. They didn't have a car. I mean, they did have a car, but let me figure out a way to say this. They did have a type of car, but they didn't. Like, the cops were like,
they had a general idea of the car, but they didn't have the car. To narrow it down.
Let me tell you how it was. It's like, it could be this car or this car. With this car.
Like 13 minutes.
In this year. Or it could be a completely... No, I mean, at least they had, it was this car, and it was this color. They were like, it could be a red, it could be a black, it could be this. Like, I mean, it was like all over. It could be this year, or it could be 10 years newer. Like, it was a huge... Like, they're like, oh, it's a car, not a truck type thing.
Mm.
Like, they didn't have it narrowed down much at all. Like, they had, oh, it could be possibly four different type cars, a 10-year time span, and it could be about four or five different colors is what they had it narrowed down to.
Wow.
Not really narrowed down much. But when Jake would leave from time to time, he would barricade Jamie underneath the bed with bags, laundry bins, and then stack weights all around it, and told her that he would know if she moved anything or if she tried to escape. On Saturdays, he would force her under the twin-size bed when family would visit. Jake hit Jamie once because he thought she moved and was trying to get out from underneath the bed. He just, like, whopped her. And during a Christmas party Jake held, he threatened to kill Jamie if she moved. So while she was laying under the bed, he played Christmas music and had just a good old time with his friends and family while she's trapped under this bed.
That's messed up.
He allowed her to write a letter to her aunt, letting her know that she was okay, she was still alive. But Jake's like, yeah, I never mailed it. I let her write it, but didn't mail it. Jake assumed Jamie was too scared to escape, so he never put special locks on the door, and Jake would rarely let her go outside of the cabin. Only if there were, like, nobody around. And I feel like this place is kind of, like, off on its own anyways. But he would basically, like, go out, check, see if anybody's around. If not, she could walk out just for a second and then go back inside. On the afternoon of January 10th, 2019, Jake told Jamie he was leaving for a couple hours. He put her under the bed and, like, trapped her back in. After he left, Jamie pushed from out of the bed. She ran out of the house wearing a light-colored shirt, leggings, and a pair of his shoes. Jamie saw Janine Nutter, I think is how you pronounce her name.
That's what I would say.
Walking her dog, so Jamie ran up to her, asked her for help, and she recognized her immediately. She's like, oh my god, this is girl that's been missing, that's been all over the news, and she took her to the neighbor's house immediately. So after the police were called, Jamie told them that it was Jake Patterson who killed her mother and father and that kept her prisoner for all these days. Well, when Jake got back to the cabin, he noticed Jamie was gone, and he was pissed. So he gets in his car and he's like, let me go look for her. He's just riding around. Well, the police arrive around 4:45.
and they removed Jamie from the area safely. Jamie describes what Jake looks like to the cops, describes his vehicle, and he was spotted. When they found him minutes afterwards, Jake was driving by the house after deputies stopped him. Jake exited the vehicle and said, "I did it." Like, just, yeah, it was me. I did it.
I guess he knew he was busted. Why hide it?
So, Jake Thomas Patterson was born on June 17th, 1997. He graduated from Northwood High School. His yearbook quote was, "I'm finally done with school." Did you have a yearbook quote? I don't think we did yearbook quotes.
No, I don't think so. I think we just had to do a yearbook signature. My signature ain't the same.
Like, you're just talking about, like, signing yearbooks?
Like an autograph. Like, they got all the seniors' autographs.
Oh, not like you went up to people's, like, "Oh, sign my yearbook." Like, you had to.
Yeah, like on the senior page, like, at the, there's all the senior pictures, and then at the very bottom is, like, all of our signatures.
That's kind of cool. See, we didn't do nothing like that for ours.
But I don't think we did a quote. If we did, I don't know what, mine probably been like, "Live, laugh, love." I don't know. I feel like they tried to do quotes, but everybody was like, "I don't know what to do," so they did the signature. But
I would be like, "Deuces."
He'd be like, "I finally showed up, just to end it."
But anyways, after high school, this gooby of a person, he went to the Marine Corps, because, yeah, they're gonna whip him into shape. And he lasted about 5 weeks before he got kicked out of basic. And they're like, "Bye-bye, you suck." Well, a random...
kick you out like that?
Yeah, if you suck so bad, they will. So, a random fact is he worked at Jennie-O Turkey for a short period of time.
What's Jennie-O Turkey?
It's like the turkey meat that Mama used to buy, and I think it's like in the green and white package.
Oh.
Her aunt is the owner of Jennie-O's.
Oh.
Plus, her parents worked there too.
So they knew him.
No. They never crossed paths.
No.
Just kind of like a, "Oh, he worked there," because it's, I guess, like a factory in town. But they had no clue, any of them intertwined. Mm. Never crossed each other's path. So, yeah, just a random... So, Jake was charged with 2 counts of first-degree homicide and 1 count of kidnapping. He received 2 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole, plus 40 years.
I don't understand that. Your sentence to 200 and something years, plus blah, 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 and it's like, just say you sentenced to death. Like, you there to get that.
Forever. Till you croak. Yeah.
Let's be real. Nobody's going to be in jail for 200 and something years. True. And if they are, then they deserve to get out after that.
It's like, after you die the first time, you have another life sentence. And then after that life, when you die again, you got 44 plus years.
I wonder if something was to come up, and, for instance, say he found a loophole and he got out of a life sentence. They're like, "Guess what? You still got another life sentence." And if he gets out of that one, then they're like, "You still got 40 years. I don't know.
I figured you would know more about that Ben Bonds person.
I wasn't a judge. No, it wasn't on my mini test that I had to take to be certified.
Gotcha.
It was about stupid stuff. Like, not even about being a bondsman or anything like that. It was stupid, and it was ridiculous. Anyways, but no, that's after they showed up to court, it wasn't on us anymore.
So on March 27th, he pled guilty to 2 counts of the first degree homicide and then 1 count of kidnapping because he didn't want it to be hard on Jamie. Like, he didn't want her to have to relive everything. Like, oh, you're such a nice guy, but she's still gonna have to tell her side to the cops. He told the cops, he's like, I'm just gonna go ahead and plead guilty, tell you everything I did, so Jamie doesn't have to go through all the trauma and heartache of reliving what I did to her.
Sure does. I mean, regardless, at least he admitted. And it wasn't like, oh, we have no proof, so you're out on bond.
So, Jake tells officers he sees Jamie getting off the bus, and he was just like, yep, she's the one I'm going to take. So, while he was in jail, he wrote a letter responding to, like, news station people. And he basically, you know, he apologized for his crime. He stated that he committed it basically an impulse, which, of course, we know that if he went into a house knowing nothing about the people who lived there, no clue how many people was in there.
Well, that and just beating on the door instead of trying to sneak in.
Yeah, I mean, just whatever. It was weird. He added that his intentions from the beginning was to plead guilty in order to spare Jamie and her family from the trauma of the case. So we wouldn't have to go to trial.
Wow.
What a goop. Later,
at least it didn't have to play out and it was just done and over with, but.
It's like she still had to do.
Yeah.
The same thing. It's like, oh, don't you deserve a cookie? Because you're so great. Later that month, a TV reporter received a cell call from Jake where he briefly answered questions that he sent to him in a letter regarding his time spent with Jamie. Jake said, we would just watch TV, play board games, talk about stuff, we cooked.
Yeah, okay.
It's like, I didn't kidnap this girl and kill her parents, you know, we just played board games, just chit-chat, we watched TV, you know, just like, normal day.
Yeah, that's why she ran away.
In July of 2019, he was transferred from Dodge Correctional to an out-of-state prison in New Mexico, where he got in a fight with another cellmate in August, and we're gonna hope and pray that he got the snot beat out of him. We don't know what happened to him, but we're gonna pray that he got the snot beat out of him. Because nobody likes anybody that screws kids.
Right.
Jamie is now living with her aunt and uncle. The dog that went bat crazy in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
He has it back, which is Molly. And she seems to be doing pretty good considering everything. Jamie wrote a statement that was read in court, and here is her statement. She said, last October, Jake Patterson took a lot of things that I loved away from me. He made me the most sad that he took away my mom and my dad. I love my mom and dad very much, and they love me very much. They did all things that they could do to make me happy and protect me. He took them away from me forever. I felt safe in my home and loved my room and all my belongings. He took all of that too. I don't want to see my home or myself because all the memories of that night. My parents and my home were the most important things in my life. He took them away from me. I have an alarm in my house now. Just so I can sleep. I used to love to go out with my friends. I love to go to school. I love to do dance. He took all those things away from me too. It's hard for me to go in public. I get scared and I get anxious. These are just ordinary things that anyone like me should be able to do. But I can't because he took that away from me. But there are things that Jake can never take away from me. He cannot take away my freedom. He thought he could own me, but he was wrong. I was smarter. I watched his routine and I took my freedom back. I will always have my freedom and he will not. Jake Patterson can never take away my courage. He thought he could control me, but he couldn't. I feel like what he did is what a coward would do. I was brave, he was not. He cannot take away my spirit. He thought he could make me like him, but he was wrong. He can't ever change me or take away who I am. He can't stop me from being happy and moving forward with my life. I will go on doing great things in my life. He will not. Jake Patterson will never have any power over me. I feel like I have some power over him because I get to tell the judge what I think should happen to him. He stole my parents from me. He stole almost everything I love from me. For 88 days, he tried to steal me. And he didn't care who he hurt or who he killed to do that. He should stay locked up forever.
You go, Jamie.
Drop the mic, girl. You tell him. Like, so it's like a horrible story.
Yeah.
But she escaped. She was rescued. And she seems, I mean, considering, she's okay.
Horrible beginning. All right, ending-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Ish.
We're going with that.
So you ready for lighten it up with her dum-dum?
Let's lighten it up. Let's do a palate cleanse to that story, because we need it.
Actually, maybe it might be, and it might not be, so I guess we'll find out as we keep reading, huh? So, this is not a Florida man this time.
We already established he's a Tennessee man.
No. It's a Texas man.
Okay.
A Texas man drives away from a car crash. Now it's got to pause. With the other driver on his hood.
Was the one car trying to drive away from the scene of the crime, and the other guy was like, "Hold up, no you ain't," and leaps on there?
Let me finish reading and we'll find out, because I don't know.
Because that's what I'm thinking.
This Texas driver didn't just leave the scene of a crash. He took his victim with him. A 50-year-old College Station man, which if you don't know, that's the town where Texas A&M is. That's where College Station is. It's the city. Was driving on Thursday around 4:30 p.m. when he rear-ended a pickup. Police said in a Facebook post, as the pickup driver walked up to the Dodge Charger, the guy who was driving the Dodge Charger, drove aggressively towards the pickup driver, witnesses says, forcing the pickup driver to hop on the charger's hood to keep him from getting run over. Witness say what happened next. He drove off with the pickup driver latching himself onto the hood. Hit and run, but the guy who got hit was not letting him run. So, there's actually a video of it.
Let's play that video.
That's where the Cracker Barrel is.
It's a good thing that the hood has that little hump crunch type thing in there, so he can hold on pretty good.
Yeah.
What would you have done, considering that you have been in a hit and run, the person that you hit hopped on your car? to your car.
I'm going to go ahead and change the subject and tell you. I'm going to go ahead and send you that link. That way you can get that uploaded. So, where can they find that post on Facebook at?
They can find that post on TCWI.
I don't even know.
It popped up in both spots and it was like, bleep. You can find that post on TCWI Discussion Group on Facebook.
Instagram at
TCWI underscore podcast underscore.
If you love us so much, you can also go to
our Patreon page, which is Patreon.com/thecrimesareinto, or just go to our webpage, which is thecrimesareinto.com, and click the link, because it'll take you there.
There you go. So,
there you go.
See you next time.
See ya.
Bye.